We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
So you were on the CW show, so were you talking about this Mothman case? I guess talk a little bit about that, because where we're at now is sort of like this thing is still hanging around, you know, this faux Mothman is still in the zeitgeist. Clearly, you were on CW last night, so it's still got the attention of people, again, with the resources. You know, it's great that they brought you in. If it had been a completely like, oh, wow, the Mothman's running around Chicago, then I'd be like, all right, hold on, guys. Have you even heard of Allison Jorland's work? So I'm glad that was the case. So talk a little bit about that. That was last night on CW. I didn't get a chance to see it. I was working last night, but I'll probably try and check it out online this weekend.
Yeah, it was on Mysteries Decoded, and one of the hosts was M.J. Benias, who is a great researcher out of Canada. And so, you know, we've worked together previously. He had a book that he put out, I don't know, a couple years ago now, I guess, the UFO people. Time just keeps ticking away. But, yeah, so the UFO people came out, and he had me write an essay for that book. And so, you know, we've developed a friendship. And when he found out that they were going to get to do an update on the show, because they had done a, you know, Point Pleasant Mothman episode. And so, you know, now because of COVID, they don't get to really go any place. So they thought, well, let's Skype up Allison and update this episode with the Chicago Mothman stuff. So unfortunately, though, even though they did talk to me for over an hour, we hashed out all of this stuff. And, you know, we taped it, like I said, for at least an hour, if not more, because I know we were talking for longer than that. And both the bulk of it was dropped. I mean, there was nothing there was nothing really said of the reports. You know, nothing evidence-wise, for example. So that was the part that they included was when I was talking about the Thunderbird and the possibility that maybe what people were are seeing is a Thunderbird.
Yeah.
So that's the only clip that they used. They showed a little bit of me on my Mothman channel, which was great, but they didn't mention the URL, which is youtube.com/Mothman. but then I stupidly mentioned the name of the major purveyor of the reports. I mentioned the name of the blog. So they got because of that. So really, you know, what have I done to these people? That's terrible. People, you know, readers, let's say enthusiasts, you know, still are interested in wild claims. And, you know, I don't know that they're that interested to really dig in deep and find out if there's any truth to the claims. They just want to hear the wild stories. And so they're always going to go to that site.
So, absolutely. Yeah.
You know,
so you haven't really – you're swimming upstream here anyway, and it's like I can tell you from experience, just from being in this for years, like people – The question is far more fascinating than the answer. And when you find answers and provide them for people, you don't get nearly as much interest. It's kind of like, you know, on a much grander scale, like I talked recently about the Loch Ness Monster DNA, environmental DNA study that showed it was probably an eel and shit. But it's like the Loch Ness Monster is going to live forever. Like, for better or for worse, and much to my chagrin because of what I think is a terrible name, the Lake Michigan Mothman is going to live for you know, a long, 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 long time. Like it's got its hooks into the zeitgeist. So these guys who were like, oh man, come on, like they really just need to put on their big boy pants and accept the fact that like people are gonna have issue with your story, but your story is apparently like really popular. So get over it.
Yeah. So. I don't see any way that I've hurt them. So, you know, and I really don't want to hurt anybody. I mean, I'm not in this to hurt people. I'm in this because
exactly.
I like
yeah,
paranormal
yeah.
investigation. That's it. And I wanted to
right.
investigate something paranormal. Turned out that maybe it's not paranormal, or maybe it's something different. Maybe it, you know, somebody saw a Thunderbird type creature again. You know, that so often happens in the Midwest, and it was just, you know, put together in a package to be Mothman because of that upcoming 50th anniversary. But I'm not saying that nothing happened, because I think extraordinary things do happen all the time, and we just don't have the tools to process them. But I think they are definitely out there. I know I've had my own experiences. But, yeah, I'm not trying to just say that nothing extraordinary happens. I know that it does. And, you know, there's other people like Sam Maranto is like thinking, well, maybe this is some kind of disinformation plot. You know, maybe we're being distracted from something else. You know, that is really happening. So, and hey, that's the dangerous thing. I mean, how would we know? And how would we know which of these reports is authentic if we just throw everything into the same basket, no matter how many red
right.
flags there are? And
yeah,
that's
exactly.
that's the problem
yeah.
here. And like you said, the lack of resources. We can't afford that, and we can't afford, you know, perhaps being hoaxed by dogmatic skeptics, you know, to be made fun of later, which has happened to people in the paranormal. You know, we can't afford disinformation campaigns that distract us from something that's really going on. You know, we can't afford just mindless hoaxes or like a 4chan-level hoax like have been perpetrated by people on 4chan before, obscuring real witness accounts. We can't afford that kind of nonsense just because you want to blow up something bigger than it is.
Yeah, that's kind of like I said about how they read like Reddit. That part of me did kind of think that, where it was like, let's, even if it was just a handful of people, it would be, you know, it's very easy for them to be like, let's troll this guy and send him some send him made up Mothman reports. It's like, if all you're doing is taking them and putting them out there, like, there's really no quality control. So
right.
that's the troublesome
mind.
Part.
And I don't mind, hey, let's put everything up there, but then let's annotate. Right?
Right.
We can say I received this report and here's what I found in my detailed investigation. And, you know, this, you know, maybe people could even rate it as to, you know, what the veracity what veracity score do you think this has? You know, instead of just putting everything in the this happened basket, and, you know, isn't this incredible? The world is coming to an end. Mothman is spelling our doom.
well,
you know,
I might believe that part.
Oh, right. If it happened in 2020, then we're all on board. But
yeah, exactly. But, yeah, so, I mean, we can kind of – I think we've gone a long time here on this already, and it's sort of like – so let's move on from this thing.
Yes,
as I said, this thing is going to linger for a long time, regardless of how tremendous Allison's work has been. And, again, kudos to the paranormal community, the good guys in the paranormal community, gals, you know, who can see it with their own open eyes about what this is all about.
Dave Benias is one of those people. I say that, you know, but anytime you're on a TV show, you know, it's not, he doesn't get the final say on content. So whatever the others do with it, they do with it. So it's okay. You know, if you saw that little clip last night, you know, I said something very similar tonight, but I kind of gave you the whole enchilada tonight. So, replay this one. And maybe we can put this to bed.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, well, I hope folks check this one out and, you know, because I've come close to doing shows about this thing, even though I'm not really a big fan of it. And I would have brought up a lot of these critical questions like, hey, how come you had to use the Mothman name, dude? That's not cool. But I just, you know, to me it was like, I never ran out to, I was really ever enthusiastic about this story, for years and years and years, for as long as it's been around, because to me, it just doesn't pass the smell test, man. It doesn't pass the smell test. And I think anybody who's been in this field for a long time felt that same way before a lot of your stuff came to light anyway, you know? It was like you said. Didn't you say Heather Wade said the same thing when she was going to have you on the show?
Right.
It's like anybody who's been in this field for a long time heard this story and just kind of was like, I don't think so. I don't think so, man. You know. So anyway,
yeah,
but hey, for that,
it's
gonna last for last a long time anyway.
So yeah.
So let's talk.
So maybe we should move on to talk about the new YouTube channel, which I'm working
on. Look at you. Are you psychic? Because that's exactly where I was going next.
That's exactly what I
want to ask you about next. So you've launched this new YouTube channel, and it's. Let me get my notes out. I'm notorious for this.
I walk around
while I'm doing the show.
No,
so
it's okay.
Next thing you know, I come to the point where I need to read something off the page. Look, hold on now. So
the
new YouTube channel is Paranormal Women, A Hidden History. And you can tell us about this, but I want to put you over here for it because you just launched it. I watched the first couple episodes. This week,
yeah,
I think you just
started.
Put the new one out today, and it's tremendous. It's really, really informative, and I recommend it for anybody because personally, I'm pretty well versed in the history of the paranormal, but not as these are stories sort of from way back before the turn of the last century. This makes me feel old saying you have to clarify that. This is the turn of from the 1800s to the 1900s. So these my sort of frame of reference goes back maybe to like the I don't know what when Charles Fort came along and then sort of like the 40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah,
that's sort of my frame of reference. So to me, this is really fresh,
early
new information.
Yeah.
So talk about Paranormal Women, A Hidden History. It's the new YouTube channel. Tell us all about it and talk about some of these, some of the pioneering women you profiled. The one you did today, Zora Neale Hurston. And some of the other folks you mentioned in the introductory video.
Yeah, so in the introductory video, we focused on about three different notables, and there's many more. This is a presentation that I've given at a few different conferences now, and you know, people were really into it. So you know, I decided why not make a YouTube channel about it. I mean, I want people to know the history of the paranormal. And, and of course, you know, men have made some amazing contributions in the field, but their work is generally pretty well known. And, you know, when I started learning about, you know, some of these women, I mean, they've really made foundational contributions, and we don't know their names at all. And so that's why it was important for me to go back, because I think there have been women investigators out there. You know, I know people know about the Fox Six Sisters, and they know about, you know, other, like, psychics and mystics like Madame Blavatsky and stuff like that. But, you know, it seems that women are, to me, when I look at, you know, all the paranormal content that I've digested over the years, it seems like, you know, women have an accepted role, usually. You can be like a poltergeist agent, or you can be a crazy ghost, or you can be this magnificent mystic medium or psychic. But are there any female investigators? And, there are. So the first ghost hunter, her name is Catherine Crow, and she wrote an amazing book that you can read right now for free online, and I would suggest everybody do that. And I'm going to be making videos about her because she is such a foundational person in the creation of the paranormal and parapsychology fields. So she wrote a book called The Night Side of Nature, which, again, you can get for free online, or you can buy a copy on Amazon right now. I'm looking at a physical one. It's Colin Wilson, the Colin Wilson Library of the Paranormal. So it's a little bit older, but Colin Wilson, who was an amazing paranormal researcher and existentialist writer in England, you know, he also recognized her and her contributions. So the word poltergeist is a word that we use all the time. in the paranormal field. And the word doppelganger is another term that is quite popular. Now, those are both German terms, but they were brought into English language usage by Catherine Crow in The Night Side of Nature. Now, Catherine Crow was a writer in the 1800s in England, and she was a woman at a time when you couldn't even, like, own land or vote, and still she was doing it for herself. She lived in England. She was born in Kent, and she married an army officer, and then she left him for reasons unknown and escaped to Edinburgh and became a writer. She started out as a novelist and actually wrote the first modern detective story in 1841, although the credit is given to Edgar Poe, Edgar Allan Poe, who I really love as well. But he came out with his magazine story months after her story, her novel, The Adventures of Susan Hopley, was published in January of 1841, and then he came out with his magazine story, Murders at the Rue Morgue, in April of that year. Many feel that he was influenced by her. But anyway, so she's writing fiction, and then she's reading a lot of material from other European countries, and she reads widely. She reads German and French, and she starts to notice in particular, and this is something, I just another soapbox moment that I think paranormal investigators should do more of, is read the investigations of other cultures and see what's going on there and use that to
enrich, absolutely,
you know, our understanding. So that's what she was doing, you know, just as a writer reading this German information, and she was like, wow, I can't believe that all this amazing stuff is going on in Germany. There's all these physicians and scientists that are uncovering such, you know, monumental stuff about, you know, the hereafter, and I need to write a book about it. And that's where the book, The Night Side of Nature, came. So if you read the book, it has ghosts in there, of course. It's got ghosts coming out of every end. But she also has near-death experiences, and out-of-body experiences, and twin telepathy, and, you know, all these things that we think are, you know, maybe more modern manifestations. She was investigating them back then, and this book came out in 1848, and you'll be surprised when you pick it up how relevant it still is. And she actually started going to seances when the spiritualist movement began over in England. And she was really lucky to put out this book right before the spiritualist movement started there. So she became kind of the it girl there for a while because this book came out at exactly the right time.
That's pretty amazing. See, it's funny because I think about it. It's like I don't recall where all this stuff came from, so I didn't know it. So when I saw your thing about how she brought Poltergeist and Doppelganger over to the English world, it's like, and then learning it's like 1848, that's really amazing. You almost don't think,
right.
Like, was she, like, what was the extent of, was she just sort of reading, or was she going out to, like, investigate these things?
Going,
like, what was her deal?
That's a really great question. She was collecting accounts from all her friends and anyone that would send her information. But actually, in one of her other books, because she has you know, many, many novels, but she has three books that are, you know, paranormal and factual in nature: The Night Side of Nature, Ghost and Family Legends, which came out afterward in 1858, I believe. And then also that same year, another book called Spiritualism and the Age We Live In, which is mainly a kind of a philosophical look at the paranormal and the spiritualist movement. So, but she, in 1854 in Edinburgh, investigated a haunted house. And I think this is probably one of the first investigations of that nature of the model that we would recognize. You know, she took different notable people, a doctor, a clairvoyant, and they went to a house where someone was murdered. And they sat in there and recorded their experiences and tried to reach out to whatever was haunting the house. And she had some amazing experiences with diamond-shaped lights that were rising out of the floor. And she had those experiences, interestingly, when she was actually she had her hand on the clairvoyant's shoulder. And so some of what the clairvoyant was seeing, she started to be able to see. So to me, that's really amazing, that account that, you know, in 1854, something of that level is being done. And then, you know, 50 years later, we would get, you know, Harry Houdini, we would get the Society for Psychical Research and the American Society for Psychical Research, and she laid the groundwork for especially those psychical research societies. They were using a lot of her techniques. So, yes, she was interviewing witnesses. She was going out to locations whenever possible. And she was reading foreign literature and putting it together with accounts that are happening closer to home, and she was bringing this all together. So it's an amazing book, and you know, we only have a short time, but I just want to really encourage everybody to read that book, because it still has insights in it that are so relevant today.
Yeah, it's tremendous. It's very interesting. It's like the way you laid out what she was doing. It's like she sounds like a more She sounds like a more focused and dedicated paranormal researcher than most of the people in the field today. You know, I guess that's what happens when you don't have to have a podcast, right? So she didn't have a blog or anything. So she was actually researching.
That's right.
So that's pretty.
Yes.
That's pretty awesome.
that's
it's
a good
really,
insight. Podcasts do take a lot of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but yeah, it's fascinating to think like that. She. I mean, if she didn't come up with it, I mean, it's certainly one of the earliest sort of ideas where it's like it sounds like a textbook, like what you'd see again, like on in this modern time, like what you'd see on basic cable. It's like she assembled a team of experts and went to the haunted location. That's what you see every weekend on one of these paranormal shows, you know, on one of these cable channels. So it's like, wow, that's just incredible that was happening in 1854.
And yet nobody knows anything about her. It's like, okay, so let me just say, earlier this summer, there was a panel of women who are on those different paranormal shows. And so I got the press information about that. And then so I, you know, it was a whole virtual thing, but I got to take part and ask questions. And so I asked, well, you know, what women in the paranormal inspired you? And sadly, the only person anybody knew to say was Lorraine Warren. And beyond that, they mentioned each other. So, but there's a much deeper history. And, you know, people who, you know, did research that has tons of documentation that goes with it, and, you know, really tried to connect it to other cultures and, you know, to the ancient Greeks and, you know, different things that were coming from antiquity. So try to put it all together to get a better, you know, more well-rounded understanding. And, you know, that's what Catherine Crowell was all about. So, I could talk about her forever, but we should give these other people some time. So the other one that I have in the intro video is Alexandra David Neal, and she's another person to bring out, because there's another word that you hear bandied about all the time, and it's tulpa, which is the idea of the thought form creature.
Right.
And usually people don't reference Alexandra David Neal, who was, you know, a woman. She was born in 1868, And interestingly, she held on all the way to 1969. But back in the 1920s and even before that, when she was even younger, she was even when she was a teenager, she was running around, running away from home and trekking about Europe and India and other places, and then coming back when the money ran out. So she actually is French, and she was originally from France, but then the family moved to Belgium, and you know they're a richer family. So she used her resources to investigate Eastern mysticism. This is what consumed her. She was very interested in meditation and Buddhism, and so she would throughout her life travel all over Asia and live with Buddhist monks. And in doing that, she found out some really incredible paranormal things. She saw the monks actually demonstrating paranormal abilities. And she even tried her hand at some of these paranormal abilities as well. So this idea of the tulpa, which is this thought form creature, which again is the power of the mind to create an image and give it life and then imbue it with the power to walk around by itself. And in her own explorations, she created a Father Tuck type character. And she wanted to bring this jolly, you know, happy presence into the world. And then apparently he turned a little bit evil and started to take on a cruel streak in his independence. And then she was forced to destroy him before anyone got hurt. So she talks about tulpas. She also talks about telepathy and tummo, which is the power to control your body heat, and even levitation. And all these things are talked about in one of her she has 30 books. I think 35 is the number I came up with. So she has about 35 books. But the one you want to get to really focus in on the paranormal aspect is Magic and Mystery in Tibet, which was published in 1929. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, she was amazing that she could be a woman traveling alone in Asia into places where you're not supposed to be able to go. In 1924, she snuck into the Tibetan city of Lhasa, which was off limits to Westerners at the time. And she variously disguised herself as a beggar and a monk and didn't carry much with her. She wanted to carry a camera or surveying equipment, but didn't do it because she was so afraid of being discovered. So she would only hide like a compass, a pistol, and a purse of money under her rags, and you know,
wow,
break into these different places. And she actually became friends with the 13th Dalai Lama, who was living in exile at the time in India. And
oh wow!
Actually, in support of her breaking into the city of Lhasa in Tibet, and finding out what she could find out. So it's amazing that she was able to do this. She also would disguise herself as the mother of a young llama. On one of her trips, she met a 14-year-old llama, and he became taken with her, and you know, they were companions for 40 years. And she would pose as his mother to get into places. So she was already, you know, quite tanned because of her exposure to the elements, trekking in the mountains as they were. And but then she would take yak hair and blacken it, and then use that to actually extend her own hair. So she had her own she could have
oh, wow,
her own fashion YouTube channel about yak hair extensions. So she would disguise, you know, really go through these elaborate disguise procedures so that she, you know, even though she was a European woman, she could pass as this young lama's mother. So
wow,
man, she magic and mystery in Tibet. I'm just starting to really crack into that now. I haven't read the whole thing yet, but there's some amazing stories in there. And I should bring out too, you know, it's interesting, this idea of tummo, Buddhist monks will, as part of their training, be put out into the cold and be doused with water, freezing water. You know, they're out in the snow already, they're doused with freezing water. And then they put and, you know, even though it's freezing temperatures, they're able to heat up and dry that sheet. That's their test. And that's called tummo. And isn't it interesting that somebody like Wim Hof comes along and he's able to bring this into, you know, Western understanding by actually demonstrating the process himself. So
I lost you. We lost you there for a minute. What are they? You cut out for a moment. What do they put in the water? A sheet?
So the Buddhist monks
broke
up
right when you said. They put, and then like there was something. Then there was like dead air. And then it was like in the water.
I'm sorry.
I don't know what. I couldn't wrap my mind around what the thing was. So I, for the people elsewhere who are listening, who are like, I have terrible OCD like that. So you know, my day. So what do they put in the water?
So they put a sheet that is soaked in water around the shoulders of Buddhist monks that are out in the snow. So they're sitting on the snow meditating and freezing.
Okay.
And then they take a soaking wet sheet and put it around their shoulders. And the test that they're undergoing is to use the power of the mind to activate something that they call tummo to heat up and dry the sheet.
Okay. All right.
Yes. So that's one of the things that she wrote about. But, you know, she also wrote about, you know, telepathy among the monks and also perhaps, I haven't really gotten into this part, but she talks about how they deal with ghosts and demons. So I'm really excited to get to that chapter. And speaking of other women besides Alexander David Neal, another one that I'm really into right now is Zora Neale Hurston, She was active during the 1920s and 1930s. Now, you might know her name because she wrote a very famous novel called Their Eyes Were Watching God. So she was a novelist, but she also studied with Franz Boas, who was known as the father of modern anthropology. And she studied to be an anthropologist as well. And then in his service and in the service of others, she was able to explore her home of the rural South and collect authentic Southern folklore. And she is an African, you know, she was an African-American woman. So you can imagine how hard it was to be a woman in the 1920s and 1930s. How hard was it to be an African-American woman at that time?
Right.
But she refused to accept limitations and just pushed the envelope whenever she could. And she actually, as I said, started in the rural South investigating and just collecting folklore from her friends and neighbors in her home of Eatonville, Florida, but then moved on and for some reason got this fascination in hoodoo and voodoo and actually ended up in the 20s. At the end of her book, Mules and Men, she goes to New Orleans to study voodoo practices from one of the former students and relatives of Voodoo Queen Marie Laveau. And I was really surprised when I was reading the book because it was very funny, just very folkloric, and then it very much changes and goes right into the paranormal aspect of voodoo and her experiences in New Orleans. And then after that, she was able to get a Guggenheim Fellowship to visit Haiti and Jamaica, and to investigate voodoo there in their cultures. And she wrote this book called Tell My Horse, and this has so many amazing paranormal stories in it. One of her firsts was that she was the first to photograph a zombie. In Haitian voodoo, there is an authentic process of creating a zombie. And she met one and
just for the listeners,
her.
I heard that part of the story and before the show. So I want to recommend to the folks that you can Google her name and zombie picture. And you'll see the zombie, you know, I can't, it's a radio show, so I can't show you the picture. But Zora Neale Hurston, Google that. N-E-A-L-E. So Zora Neale Hurston, and Google zombie photograph, and you'll see what Allison's going to talk about. Go ahead, because I was going to bring that part up, and because I'm looking at the picture right now. I Googled it while you were telling the story, but go on. So so folks who want to see that, that's what you want
to.
It's online.
To nose around and to you know, she was collecting folklore there, and she was also becoming initiated into voodoo in the Haitian tradition. She had already been initiated by several two-headed doctors, as they're called in New Orleans, and then she came to Haiti to be initiated into their rites of voodoo. So she wasn't only investigating, but she also was a practitioner. But she's interesting because she is skeptical. I mean, sometimes she'll say, well, you know, maybe we can explain this by such and such. But and for the creation of zombies, that's a really good example of that, because she's like, these are not the returned dead. This woman I met, it was a woman who was dosed with some drug back in 1907, and everyone thought she was dead. And then you get buried, and then the Bokor, the evil voodoo priest, retrieve you from the cemetery, and you are sold into servitude because your language center and your memory center has been destroyed by the drug. And now,
right.
You know, all you can do is perform menial labor, and you can't really help yourself. But then 29 years later, she would be discovered wandering along a road, and she was able to be identified as this woman, Felicia Felix's mentor. And so that case was documented. And it's just amazing that I knew nothing about that case or the other cases that she mentions in the book. And if I can just tell one more story about her.
Yeah, I was going to say, Allison, we don't have necessarily a hard out, so we can go a little over the hour. If you have time, I have time, so you don't have to.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't have to. I have a few more questions about the ghost walks and COVID and how that's affected. So we'll ask you that after we get over the hour or whatever. But I was going to ask you anyway when we got. So you don't have to think. You know, you don't have to. Unless you got to go somewhere, you don't have to start packing your bags.
No.
Just yet. So I'll just give you a heads up.
Okay, I'm all good.
All right,
so,
go on.
One of the most fascinating stories in this book, Tell My Horse, deals with Jamaica. There's a settlement called Arkampong. I'm probably slaughtering that word. I apologize to all the Jamaicans out there, but I'm just trying to bring it out there, and you can correct me later. So there's this Maroon settlement, and Maroons were slaves from West Africa that were brought to Jamaica back in the 1600s. And that's when Spain was ruling over Jamaica. But they were able to escape, and then they escaped into the interior of Jamaica, which is very mountainous and remote. So they were able to pair up with the native Taino people, which are the people that when you think of Christopher Columbus, he's supposed to have slaughtered all those people. But there are some remnants still out there, and some of them became part of this Maroon Society, as it's called, of these escaped slaves. So they got together with the Taino people, and they developed this stronghold called Arkampong. And then the Spanish weren't able to get to them, and then later the British took over. They weren't able to get to them. So before the American Revolution in 1776, I think it was around 1739, that the British finally made a peace treaty with these escaped slaves. So anyway, they have their own culture, and you know, part of it is from West Africa, part of it is from the native people, the native Taino people, and so she wanted to learn about them because, you know, they had been, you know, the oldest society, and still are the oldest society of slaves living free, and so she couldn't pass up the opportunity to go to their settlement and learn about their culture. And in doing so, she met one of their traditional doctors, and she talks about being out on the porch with him discussing different herbal remedies. And she was having a hard time hearing them because there were so many frogs in the jungle that were chirping up a storm. And she made a comment about the frogs. You know, could somebody please stop the frogs? Because I want to hear like, all the amazing things you're saying. And he said, well, I can. And she's like, no, come on. And so he stands up, takes a deep breath, holds his hand out, and they stop.
Oh, wow.
And then she's dumbfounded. So they sit and they talk for like another hour or so. And then he said, well, I'm going to start them up again. You know, I'm going to walk down the path and I'll walk past this house and I'm going to make a whistle sound. And you'll know that I've told them it's okay to start again when you hear that whistle sound. So he went about and did this. He walked down the path, made a whistle, and all the frog orchestra started up again throughout the throughout the jungle. So she has like stories in there that are just like, oh my God. So there are things where she thinks, you know, she might have been duped, and she says, well, I'm not sure how they did that. You know, there's one story from Haiti where she is at the funeral of a Hongan, which is another voodoo priest, but it's not it's a more of a Jedi, not the Sith. When you think of the Bokor, think the Sith, the dark side. And so this priest was, you know, on more of on a positive side, and you know, on the side of light. And so, but he died. And so she went to his funeral, and so as part of the funeral, they believe you have a loa, which is a godlike spirit that is revered, and you have your devotion. You devote yourself to specific loa, which are like the like gods with a small g, let's say. And when you become a voodoo priest, you get one of these in your head. And after you die, they have to remove the spirit of the loa from your head. So guy's dead. He's laying there in front of this, you know, group of the ceremonial group. And suddenly he sits up and says something and lays back down with his dead eyes. And she's like, I don't know how they did that. She didn't know how to describe it. You know, she didn't know what kind of mechanism. But, you know, she's open to the idea that maybe, you know, even though she's a voodoo practitioner herself, you know, maybe that was hoax. She doesn't know. But that's the thing I like about her is she just lays it on the line. She tells you, this is my experience. And if she can she can explain it, she explains it. But if she can't, she doesn't try to explain it away. Or she doesn't try to you know, preach to you about anything. She's like, this is what happened, and I'm just going to give you the straight talk. And I'm not trying to sell any narrative except that I want to get out the authentic story of these people and their culture. And that's what I'm all about. So, but it's amazing how many paranormal stories are in this book. So I just want to tell everybody, please read Tell My Horse, and they probably also like Mules and Men.
Okay. All right, well, we're about to lose the live audience, so we'll say goodnight to Sesquara all the way down in Australia. She's a regular Friday night listener. I don't know what time it is in Australia. She'll tell me later, I'm sure, but big ups to her. She's a consistent Friday night listener who tunes in, again, all the way down in Australia. And Jim Vujovic, a little closer to home, down there in Florida, also in the chat room tonight. So thanks to those guys for listening. I'm sure, I know for a fact we had tons of other folks listening because there was a nice little buzz about the program as it was unfolding tonight on Twitter. So big thanks to all those folks. Now, I guess we'll sort of do the plugs here, and then we'll have that. If you don't mind, I got like maybe like 10 minutes worth of questions for you, something like that.
Yeah,
so
you got
a little bit of time. All right, cool.
Yeah, I'm glad to talk to you. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Oh, no problem. As you can probably tell by now, I'm a straight shooter, so I don't, you know,
I don't
play any games. So we're still recording. No one else can hear us now, so they cut off all the live listeners because Blog Talk is a terrible, terrible website. But I'm nearing my end of my time with Blog Talk. Now, two sort of inside baseball questions in a plug sense. Do you have a hub? Where can I direct people to? Like, there's no, you should get AllisonJorland.com to so people can find all these different avenues you have.
Yeah,
but do you have a hub that we can send people to?
I do have the URL. So you're right. I need a website. I got a lot of work to do, Tim. But right now you can go to YouTube.com/Mothman, and soon I'll be getting a custom URL for Paranormal Women, a Hidden History.
Good.
But you can search that right now. You can also go to AmericanGhost.com and see the different ghost swags that we have. And then you can talk to me anytime, actually on Twitter, at AJornlin, AJORN. AJORNLIN. I can't spell my own name.
I was wondering about that. Yeah.
It's good for coming.
I was wondering about that. I was like, you had me there for a minute. I was kind of scratching my head. I'm like, oh, she only did half her last name. We're like, what was that all about?
I know. Oh, it's kind of
All right,
so
you're very prolific on Facebook as well.
Twitter.
So folks can find you on Facebook. You post
Absolutely.
All the time. We just connected recently at the start of the summer. So, it was very. I have a hard time keeping up with your Twitter, your Facebook posts. So, you put a lot of stuff up there. I like that. And the other question is sort of the other inside baseball question, plug sort of thing is have. I joked about this with Chris Cogswell from the Mad Scientist podcast earlier in the summer. Where it's like everyone gets on my case. I've been in this field for like 20 years, so. Yet they still get on my case. Like, when are you gonna write a book? You gotta write a book to be a real paranormalist. It's like I'm already, I'm happy, I'm content with where I'm at. Thank you very much. I've never had a drive inside me to write a book for any sort of validation reason. But have you? I'm sure. And so I guess the point of that was like, I'm sure people kind of give you a little bit of grief about it. I'll give you a little bit of grief right now because I think. This story that we talked about here in the first 90 minutes, that could be a movie. Like, that could be a real, like a Hollywood movie. Like a well-meaning paranormal researcher looks into this crazy story and finds out it's all a bunch of hooey. And then ask too many questions, and then all of a sudden all hell breaks loose. Like, that could be a Coen Brothers movie. That to me, I would love you to write a book. I would love to hear that story told in a book. Like, it would be more, I don't know what you'd call it, like true crime or something, or more like this, like, it's not even about the Mothman. The Mothman's like the red herring of the story. The story is like how this all unfolded. I would love to see that that story told in a book. But have you thought about putting together a book about anything? There's always pressure on everybody to write a book these days.
I am writing a book about one of these inner women, and maybe I'll do a book about more of them. So I do have a contract in hand for that. and so I know I'm behind. I'm behind on everything too. But I've been writing a lot of tour scripts. But you know, I'm almost at the point where I can really get that book done. So it is close. So I am working on a book, and as far as writing a book on the Chicago Mothman thing, I really resisted that, but you know, somebody on Twitter was encouraging me. You know, you really got to set the record straight.
You know, right, exactly. Yeah.
So many important things to say about paranormal investigation and what happened here, and you know, I know we talked about it for 90 minutes. It's kind of fresh in my mind now, but it is something that I'm pretty sick of. But you know, when he said, you know, you kind of owe it to us to write that, then I was like, all right.
Right.
You know, I don't want to be accused of cashing in either. I mean, I just maybe if I could get a publisher who would, you know, publish it, but then also let me give it away to some people for free, something like that. Because I just feel bad that it's turned into this big money making thing.
Right. But your story, to me, it's like, I'm just one person, but I give you a pass on that. You're not like, you're like this half, like something happens to you. Like this is your experience. So I think that's, you know, I don't see that as cashing in on anything. I think that's like sharing your story about what happened here, because like I said, it reads like I think that's why I was kind of so engrossed in this at the beginning of the show tonight, and we kept it going for so long, because to me it just like reads like a Hollywood movie. It's like, what? Wait a minute. So a bunch of people said they saw a Mothman, and this woman went to investigate and found out that it wasn't true, and now like she's now they're like being assholes to her. Like this is so the world of the paranormal and so like fascinating human nature. To me, like I said, it could be a movie.
End up like a Coen Brothers movie. I've seen those movies. I hope it's good. Well, let's see.
You'd be the good guy in the movie, though. You'd be the good guy.
Yes, until I end up in the wood chipper.
Yeah, exactly.
We had to
exactly.
Nothing we could do. So yeah.
So one last thing.
I'm open to it. I'm open
there you
to
go.
The
yeah.
Book writing thing. Yeah.
I would definitely.
You guys are starting to convince me that, you know, maybe I should. You know,
yeah,
put
I
up,
think
put
it's a fascinating
top.
Story. It's not even, like I said, you wouldn't even be cashing in on, I would have no compunction that you were, like, cashing in on, it's not even about Mothman. It's about, like, what happens when you take a closer look at a story and it turns out it's not all it's chalked up to be. It's, to me, that's a fascinating angle on this.
And maybe, you know, if I put it in context of other people that has happened to, you know, historically, you know, and maybe disinformation or fake news, you know, tie that in to like a
Absolutely.
Greater cultural kind of problem that we're dealing with today.
Absolutely.
All
the
right.
other thing I...
I'm thinking, I'm
if
thinking,
you have, if
you,
you
know, maybe, definitely
yeah,
maybe
it would be awesome.
On that one.
Yeah. If you have any doubts, let me know later. I'll just cheer you on and tell you what a great idea it is. So,
well, thank
if you have a list of women for the YouTube channel, I would recommend, if you haven't already, add Anne Druffel to the list. She passed away earlier this year. Anne Druffel was tremendous. We had her on the show a long, long time ago. She wrote a really groundbreaking book with D. Scott Rogo about the Tahunga Canyon abductions, and it was just a tremendous, tremendous book. And, you know, another person, and even though it's kind of in our modern era, a lot of old-timers,
like my buddy John Tenney,
you know, remembered Anne Druffel, but it's like some of these, you know, hashtag UFO Twitter wasn't mentioned, you know, this wasn't a topic of conversation among them. So it's like a lot of people get forgotten to history, and she was somebody that put a lot of good work out there and deserves to be remembered, absolutely. So,
I'm glad that you had a suggestion, because I'd really welcome, I open that up to people because I'd like to learn more. I mean, I'm just really surprised about how many, you know, there's many more than I mentioned tonight. I just felt like I could get three in really justice. But, you know, there's many more, and I love to invite people to hit me up on Twitter. Let me spell it again because I screwed up my own name the first time. So it's A. Jornlin. That's A-O. No!
What is going on here?
I can't send the name. I'm sabotaging myself. So it's A. Jornlin, A-J-O-R-N-L-I-N.
There you go.
So check
That's
me
like
out
200 points on
Twitter.
The SAT.
But,
you remember that old like rumor when we were kids where it's like, if you spell your name right, they already give you 200 points. I don't even know if that was ever true, but that's all they ever – that was like the urban legend in high school.
I didn't even get 200 points because I can't spell my name.
I know. So I skipped over because you talked a lot about the Ghost Walk stuff in your bio part, and we spent so much time on the Mothman stuff, and so then we jump right to the Paranormal Women YouTube channel. But I did want to ask you, like, how is this? I assume this coronavirus thing has really had an impact on ghost tours and stuff like that, right? Because that's really, it's kind of antithetical to like social distancing and all the stuff we're enduring right now.
It's had an impact on all tourism, and it's really sad, like, you know, because of, right before it hit, I was in Maui, in Lahaina, and then, you know, right after I got back, you know, everything, like, clamped down, and now, you know, my Google keeps serving up to me information about what's going on there, and we do have a tour that's running at really small capacity. We're talking groups of 2 to 6 people. You know, we're keeping it really small so we can really social distance and do everything right. But, you know, it's really important to tell those stories and not just let them be forgotten. So that's one of the reasons that we do what we do. But, it's scary to see, you know, all these articles coming through about businesses closing for good because they just, you know, they just can't afford to stay in business without any tourists. So, you know, that's been really startling. You know, we have 2 tours running this year in Milwaukee, so it's been really good for us in Milwaukee. You know, we follow all the recommended practices and even go beyond that, limiting our tours to very small groups. But, you know, we have been able to have some tours. You know, we had big plans this year for a lot of tours that we wanted to add, and, you know, that's certainly been scaled back. But, you know, this won't be going on forever. You know, we'll get back to it.
Right, right.
You know, and we still have tours going in diminished capacity, but, you know, we're still telling the stories. And, you know, that's another thing, too, I wanted to address. You know, I think it's important to have tours like this to give people a forum for their stories. And also to tell about forgotten history and tell about the paranormal as well, because I think that's really something that maybe people don't admit it, but it, wondering about the hereafter is a big part of human life. So I think that's the reason why these kind of tours have been very successful. But you do feel pressure of, you know, people wanting leading waltz, you know. I'm like, hey, I just tell it like it is. I'm not going to add bleeding walls. If there were bleeding walls, I would tell you. But, you know, it's like people sometimes expect kind of that Hollywood schlock. And it's not a haunted house. It's haunted history is what it is. And we're telling all the old stories of the people of that area and bringing them back so that they're not forgotten. And you get a lot of history of people that lived and died, and, you know, what their contributions were, along with, you know, their paranormal connections. Because everybody has one. Everybody has had paranormal experiences. So it's not easy to write one of these scripts because you really got to dig deep, connect things, and look at a lot of old newspaper articles, talk to a lot of witnesses, whatever you can get to put one of these together. But, you know, I think after you do, it really enriches the area, and that's what we've been able to do for Milwaukee. Now there's a bunch of haunted tours. You know, we were the first, and now, you know, there's a bunch of people, which is okay, because that's what I wanted. I wanted that kind of tourism to be in Milwaukee, because when I went on the tours in New Orleans and Chicago, I was like, oh, come on, I live in Milwaukee. Doesn't Milwaukee have any cool stories? Is it just all brats and brewers and bucks? I mean, why? So I was really happy to find that there was something in the community for me and for others like me.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's why I started it. And the comment I've gotten from people who go on these tours is when they tell me they take a tour and they're like, oh my God, Allison, I see the city in a whole new light. There's people like who have lived in Maui all their lives, and they take that tour and they tell the guide, I've lived here all my life. I never heard any of these stories, you know. So
yeah,
to be able to bring those things back is important. And sometimes there's sacred sites on the tours as well. There's one in Maui that was hugely important spiritually and politically to the Hawaiian monarchy and the Lihi before that. And it's a vacant lot now, pretty much, you know, and
yeah,
a parking lot.
Oh, wow. That's
and, you know, so it's like we need to keep those things going, you know. And,
absolutely.
And keep these things alive, at least in people's minds, because once you get it in their minds, then you can start getting it back out in the world. But first it has to be rooted in their minds. And
That's
what I like about Ghost Walks.
This will sound kind of cynical, but it's true, because I've experienced it myself in these difficult times. I hate to say it, and my heart goes out to everybody who's been impacted by this pandemic, so I don't want anyone to think I'm making light of this, but I have had, like, the best summer that I've had in years, because I can't go anywhere, and so here in Massachusetts, things are really pretty well opened up, because we suffered through a terrible wave of the pandemic in the spring, and everybody followed the rules, and now we can go to restaurants and go to museums and do things that a lot of places can't. And so all summer I've been visiting all kinds of fantastic places here in New England, or Massachusetts alone. I haven't even really ventured out of the state, and gone to the Lizzie Borden House, gone to the Wyda Pirate Museum on the Cape, gone to Plymouth Rock, gone to various zoos, even zoos. I guess the cynical part is going to say, if you have any opportunity to advertise these events that you do, that would kind of be my hook, because what I really enjoyed in a lot of ways about this was, like, a lot of these things I did, you weren't crammed in with a lot of tourists. Like, to the people listening, wherever you are, like, now's the time to go to the attraction in your area, because you're going to be able to breathe, and as oxymoronic as that sounds, because you'll be wearing a mask, you'll be able to move around. You'll be one of six people instead of one of 16. Like, to
right.
me, that to me has been this overarching theme for me this summer, going to these different places. It's like, I went to Plymouth Rock and Plymouth Plantation, and I was the only one there. I was the only one there at Plymouth Plantation, which is like a giant, a pretty popular tourist destination. If it was any other summer, I'm sure there would be at least 20 other people there alongside me. But I was literally the only person at Plymouth Plantation. It was unbelievable. And it was like that at a lot of these other places where it was – I did a Lizzie Borden House tour of six people.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is – awesome. This is so cool. So I guess
right.
look on the bright side of life. If wherever you are locally, folks, now's the time to go to, if you're down in Nashville, I talked about this with Kiki Dombrowski, if you're down in Nashville, go see the Bellwitch Cave. I bet you'll be one of only like 10 people there that day. Or go to the Abita Mystery House down in New Orleans. Go to these places now. Now they need your help anyway. And now's the best time to go if you want to be able to really really get the chance to spend time at these places and not be shoved aside by other tourists and stuff like that. So, and that's, I guess, what I would say. I mean, you probably don't need any help going into Halloween season with a ghost tour company. But even still, that would be kind of the way I'd present this to people. Like, if you've ever wanted to do a ghost tour and you weren't sure, like, now's the time to do it, because chances are you're going to be in a much more intimate group and really be able to experience this in a way you probably won't ever really be able to experience it again.
That's really looking at the bright side of things. And, you know, there is a bright side, you know. So you have to live through this anyway, you know. So if we have to live through it, let's go forward in the most positive way we can. And that's one of the positive things. And also, if you have to stay home, reading books. All three of these books, you know, I found, you know, like Tell My Horse. I found a free PDF. I bought the book too. But Night Side of Nature, you can get everywhere. And Alexandra David Neal, Magic and Mystery in Tibet. I found a PDF today. So there's a lot of great literature out there that you could be reading, and it could be expanding your horizons, because all these three women that we mentioned tonight were phenomenal travelers. And even though you can't do that traveling, you can travel vicariously through them and see it through their eyes. And so it's a great time to do that too. So there are positive things about every time in history. And so let's go forward and try to find some more for 2020.
There you go. All right. That's the perfect note to end the program on. I feel like I could talk to you for like another 2 hours, Allison, but we've gone long enough.
Thank
and
you so much.
It'll happen again, I'm sure, because I really, really, really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah,
I guess we went over this before, but what's that?
I'm sorry. Anytime you want to talk about ghost stories from our different tours, the different communities where we have our tours, you know, that would be a great idea for a future show as well, because there's lots of
absolutely,
great stories
yeah.
from We're, many different communities.
Absolutely. I feel like we have a lot more to talk about. So on that note, though, we will call it a night tonight. Yes, we talked about the hub thing earlier. So I guess I'm looking at 40 and Writer, Facebook.com, 40 and Writer. That might be the best place for folks to go, because people are still on Facebook. I'm not a big Facebook fan, but so
self-promoted.
Yeah.
I'm terrible at guessing, and I can't even spell my own name, and I forgot I have Facebook.com/40andWriter. There you go. That's perfect.
I don't know what I don't know what kind of black magic you're working over there, but you are fantastic at locking down URLs. When you said what do you have, youtube.com/mothman, it's like, holy shit. Like, how did you get that? What were you, like, the first person on YouTube?
Sometimes I do all right, but other times I can't spell my own name. So, you know, we all work with what we've got.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So, yeah, so there you go. I even did the plug there for the YouTube channel, youtube.com/mothman. And A. Jornlin, AJORNLIN. I'm looking at it on my computer right now, so I'm cheating.
Yay!
That's the Twitter address. Allison, I can't thank you enough. I really love this conversation, and I'm sure we'll be talking again sometime in the future. Thanks again.
Oh, me too. Thank you so much.
All right, folks. There you go. That was Allison Jornlin talking about her adventures investigating the Mothman, the Chicago Mothman, which, we, as we've established here, is not the real Mothman. I don't think they're ever going to change it now. It's like the mangy dog down in Texas. It's not the Chupacabra, but they call it the Chupacabra. It drives me up the wall. We just gave all the websites. You should be able to find her stuff pretty easily. I hope she writes some books about her adventures and all this, and her fantastic research into these pioneering women in the paranormal. Next week on the program, I kind of teased this at the start of the show. We're really close now to the end of the summer. So at some point, the summer of strangeness has to come to an end. I mean, there's a chance it will be next week. I just pulled up the calendar for September today. I've been a little out of sorts all week. with work, so I've kind of like had no, we have no plans for September, except the final Friday in September, which is when I will be presenting at the Strange Realities Conference. It's online this year, and as a special favor to me and the Banal of America listeners, I have secured, I'm going to just spoil it because I don't think Adam Sane is going to change it now. I've secured the 9 p.m. Eastern time slot on Friday night on the Strange Realities Conference. So if you're a regular Banal of America listener and you want to hear me that night, I'm not going to be on that night because I'm going to be presenting at that very time for the Strange Realities Conference. I'm going to be talking about my adventure down in Dallas last year. It's a sequel, essentially, folks. Last year at the Strange Realities Conference on site in Nashville, one of the best weekends I've had in quite some time, I presented on the history of the flat earth theory, where this crazy theory come from, how did it evolve over the years, and how do we get to where we are today. And at the conference, I announced, I had a big announcement, and that was, this was last October, that the following month, I was going to be attending the International Flat Earth Conference in Dallas so I could, like Allison, put some boots on the ground and find out who these people are, how they get into this. Because everybody talks about the flat earthers, but who are the flat earthers? That's what I wanted to know. So fast forward to the last weekend here in September, I'm going to be talking about that experience. In true flat earth form, I can't call it a weekend with the flat earthers because unlike any paranormal conference I've ever attended in my life, this one went from Wednesday to Friday. So I spent the end of the week with the flat earthers and really spent some time with them, folks. I really endeared myself to them, I think, just by the sheer amount of time I spent with the flat earthers. I mean, I hit the ground running and spent 36 hours just hanging out with flat earthers the whole weekend. Not like the local news station who comes down and films for 2 hours and then gets the hell out of there. I mean, I was eating meals with the flat earthers. I was drinking a lot of beers with the flat earthers and just having a good time and finding out who they are and how they got into all this. And so I'm synthesizing all of that at the end of the month of September with my presentation at the Strange Realities Conference titled Among the Flat Earthers, Recollections of My Trip to Dallas for the International Flat Earth Conference. So that will be at the end of September, 9 p.m., via the Strange Realities Conference, strangerealitiesconference.com. That's where you can get tickets. And you're going to be sick of hearing about this because next week on the program, we're going to have the guys who are putting on the big conference, Adam Sane and Sir Feel Stevenson of Conspiranormal, the podcast. They were so gracious, so wonderful, had me down in Dallas, had me down in Nashville last year, and I had such a good time. Anyone who knows Banal here knows I had too much fun down in Nashville, but it was absolutely worth it. And I would love to go again. And I was a little heartbroken. I was very heartbroken that because of COVID, we could not convene in Nashville this year. But we're doing it online, and that opens up the concept to a whole – and we'll talk about this next week on the program – opens up the concept to a whole another level. Because when you're putting on a conference, you have a budget. You can only bring so many people in. You got to fly them in. You got to put them up in a hotel. You got to pay for their meals. You got to pay them if you can, even if it's a modest stipend. Each speaker costs a decent chunk of money when you put all that together. When you're putting together an online event, the sky's the limit, really, and you can do so much more. So they, to their credit, they have expanded their horizons with this online Strange Realities Conference. And it's going to be a real barn burner. There are a lot of really, really good researchers and good friends of mine who are going to be presenting over the course of that final weekend in September. So we're going to talk about all that next week. Adam Sane, Sir Feel Stevenson from the Conspiranormal podcast. I'm going to try, And I can hear kind of the groaning now. I'm going to really try. I'm not going to turn. We don't want this to be like an infomercial. It's not going to be like a two-hour promotional thing to present the Strange Realities Conference. So if anyone's listening right now and they're like, oh, Benal, what the fuck? You're just gonna get these guys on and plug this stupid thing for 2 hours. No, we're not going to do that. We're gonna talk about the paranormal. We're going to talk about, you know, whatever the hell we want to talk about, really. But it's not going to be a long infomercial, I can assure you of that. So definitely you're going to want to tune in. That's next week. I believe that's September 4th. I always have a hard time with the change of the month. I never know what the corresponding following week is. But I believe it's the 4th. Yeah, it's the 4th. September 4th, 9 p.m. Eastern, you know, right here at Benal of America. Yeah, Adam Sain, Sir Phil Stevenson from Conspiranormal talking about the Strange Realities Conference. If you like raucous episodes, I'd tune into that one. I'll probably have to crack a beer open like within the first like 10 minutes of that show. So God knows where we'll be at the end of the 2 hours. But I think you'll enjoy it, and I think we'll have a lot of fun because Adam and Sir Phil are great guys, and I'm looking forward to really cutting loose with them and talking about this crazy world of paranormal, what's going on in the world right now. Things are crazy right now in general. So we'll get into all that and the challenges and the upsides of putting on an event like this during these weird times. So, with all that said, I'm going to wish you all adieu for the evening. I hope you all have a fantastic weekend, and thank you very much for listening. Until the next edition of BOA Audio, next week, September 4th, 2020 at 9 p.m., this is Tim Benal, thanking you for listening and signing off.